Hello, and welcome to the Unwrap with J-Rap show. I'm your host, J-Rap. So this will be my very first episode. I hope you're all here just as excited as I am. Today's topic, as I had hinted to in my introduction, is going to be about the beginnings of a United States Marine, from my perspective.
Hello, right on the yard.
Hello, right on the yard.
In order to do that, I have to give you the setup, or in other words, what made me want to be a Marine, and what drove me to make that decision that many think is mad or crazy.
Are you like a crazy person?
Alright, so we have to go back about 18 years or so when I was around 20. I think I was 19 at the time. I absolutely hated school. Hated it. I was going to college, you know, as a kid after high school, nowadays often does. I had very little self-direction in my life. And really, I didn't know what I wanted to do in life, nor how I was going to get whatever it is that I should be doing or what I should be going for. So I'm 19, nearing 20. I don't know what I want to do, but I know I must do something. What do I do? Well, I do nothing. Sometime in 1999 or maybe 2000, I get a phone call from some Marine staff sergeant. I was going to hang up, but I listened because I'm not a rude person and that's not my style, or at least it wasn't then. Nowadays, you know, the way phones are, I will hang up on somebody in a heartbeat if I don't like what they have to say, unless it's something, you know, that I maybe want to hear, because that's the way life is now. It's a much faster pace. But anyway, the recruiter gives me his spiel, and I tell him I already talked to the Navy, the Army, and the Air Force. And he said, oh, so you haven't talked to the Marines yet, huh? Or something to that effect. Of course I said no, but I didn't think the military is something for me, is what I told him. And then he says, well, I see here that you requested information on the Marine Corps. Now, to my surprise, I was like, no, I didn't. And he asked me if I had maybe tried to send in for some information or, you know, trying to get something from a magazine or something. I said, oh yeah, I remember. I sent in for an Iwo Jima coin or a keychain. I think it was a coin, a bronze coin that had the Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima. Of course, I didn't have any clue what that was then. I just knew it was in Iwo Jima, and it was some military dudes putting the American flag up. He said, well, I have it right here at the office for you. I can bring it for you tomorrow around 3 or 4 o'clock if that's a better time. He hooked me in and set the appointment with me, not even know what the hell just happened. So the appointment's for the next day at house. My parents' house, which is a very important detail. The next day, I'm late to my own appointment with the recruiter. I'm at my parents' house in which I live. The recruiter is there in the living room playing video games with my brother waiting for me. I apologize for my being late, and he dismisses it like nothing happened at all, like I was, you know, on time or something. As we talked, he very strategically pointed out that I had no plan at all, no goals in life, and that success doesn't come to people who don't have plans or goals in life. Man, what a slap in the face. He was right. I had absolutely no plans and no goals in my life. He then shows me what I needed and gave me a solution to what my problem was. I was sold. Just as he's about to get a commitment from me, in writing, in walks my mom. My mother is great, but as I said before, this was my parents' house that I lived in. So any mother can understand how she felt walking in from work and seeing a United States Marine recruiter in dress blues talking to her baby. So then pretty much she kicks him out. She does it in a nice way. And, you know, she says that, you know, she can meet with my son or, you know, if she wants to, if he wants to, if he prefers to. But she would have liked to have been, you know, asked. But from now on, he needs to conduct business at the office, if at his office. So she politely kicked him out for him disrespecting her house. But I basically failed to tell her that I was meeting with the recruiter, more than likely. So it really wasn't his fault. Although he should have asked, hey, do you live with your parents? Is there a parent I can talk to or something like that? But he didn't nonetheless. Very next day, I'm excited. So I go to the recruiter to his office or one of his offices, and I sign paperwork, you know, the first steps into my enlistment. I go down to the Military Interesting Processing Station, or MEPS, where I do the ASVAB, the military test, and or a test to check your vocational skills and such, and see if you have basically a 10th grade level of education. I also go through a physical and get screened by the Marine Liaison to see if I am fit for Marine recruit training or not. After being found qualified, I was officially depped in or awaiting boot camp.
Woohoo!
I was a Marine poolee, a person found qualified yet awaiting training or boot camp, recruit training. I remember the date was March 25th. I remember like it was yesterday. March 25th, 2000, because it was 2 days after my 20th birthday. August 28th, 2000 comes, the day I ship out to boot camp in San Diego, California. Myself and my best friend Matt were going on what they called the buddy system, which was basically a system that meant we got to go to the same platoon together, assuming we made it to a platoon after we got to boot camp, and, you know, meaning we would have had to have made it through the first processing area. Because the next few months of my life were so crazy and filled with days of activity that normal humans can't do in a few days, or maybe even a week, there's parts that are a little blurry, like flying down to California, arriving at the airport, and things like that. Just things that I'm not quite clear on. I say this because I cannot remember if Matt and I were heading from the airport to boot camp together or not. I know we left originally on the same airplane, but I don't remember after that. It was kind of the details were kind of fuzzy. I don't remember if he got on a different connecting flight or if we both landed in LAX. I can't remember. I just remember that the actual buses that were there to pick us up were full. So I had to get into a 12 or 15 passenger van, which was a lot less scary and a lot less intimidating because there was no drill instructors in the van that I was in. I don't remember if Matt was in the van with me. Again, I don't remember all that. I just remember being in the van and staring straight ahead because that's what I was told to do. So I wasn't allowed to look around and, you know, look outside and see the surrounding areas or anything. So I don't know how long it was from the airport to boot camp or to recruit training. I just remember it felt like an eternity. Once the van drove up near the yellow footprints are, you know, I'll talk about that a little later, but the yellow footprints are a very, very big milestone. Drill instructor came up screaming and told us to get out of the van and sit down in the aisle of one of the buses that he escorted us to. Then we all sat awaiting in terror that would be to come. Drill instructors, or as we call them, DIs, just for short. Eventually, a DI came on board the bus and began yelling at us to all get off the bus.
Yes, sir! Get off the bus! Get off the bus! Yes, sir!
Let's go! Get
off the bus! Let's go! Let's go! Get off the bus!
Get behind it! Get behind it!
Get off the bus! Get off the bus!
Get behind it! Let's go!
No! Yeah, no!
Pretty much how they sounded. DIs didn't yell, they screamed. It was something no one can prepare for. It was so foreign. Like, I mean, I've been yelled at by people before, you know, and been in trouble with my parents and one of them gets mad and yells or whatever, but it's nothing like a grown man screaming at the top of his lungs for you to get off his bus. And that's how it continued the entire time I was there, the entire 3 months. Then another group of DIs are screaming at us and tell us to get on the yellow footprints. This is where it all starts, people. This is where it all starts. This is where you go from the beginning stages of Marine recruit training or boot camp to what comes to be the rest of your life. I mean, it's a changing thing. It changes who you are. It changes how you hold yourself. It changes everything about a person that goes to boot camp. Some are good, some are bad, but the majority of things that you're going to learn, confidence, pride, self-reliance, and you start to kind of trust in yourself and trust in the Marines around you or the recruits around you is where you're starting. And it's really the base for how life is going to be from that point on and how I would look at things from my perspective, how I would look at things outside of the box, basically, the box that I was kind of, that I kind of grew up in. That's the beginning of this. I hope that I've drawn you all in and that you have heard, you know, the beginnings of this, even if you were a Marine and you went through all this before. I know that, you know, this could be a little bit boring because they're like, oh yeah, I went through the same thing, and just a slight different details or whatever. Details to come when I explain about boot camp are my personal experiences, and things have changed over the years. Things have changed dramatically from 2000 to now, especially. It's just crazy, the things that have changed. So you have politics that are majorly involved. Mothers of America got very involved. And this was also before 9/11. This was before we were at war with anybody. This is a time of peace. This was after the Gulf Wars, you know, the 90s, and even into the late 2000s or late 90s. We had little conflicts and stuff with other countries that most Americans didn't even have a clue about, but we did nonetheless, and it was a time of peace. We weren't at war with anybody. We had, you know, little things going on here and there around the world, but that's everyday life in the Marine Corps and in the military. There's always something going on that the public doesn't usually see. Of course, anyone in the mindset now of like an 18, 19, 20-year-old, I'll say kid, sees now, they're looking out, and their perspective now is totally different than their perspective was when I was a kid. We weren't in a time of war when I was a kid. 9/11 hadn't happened. So the lens that they have and the lens that I have is totally different. Like, they're looking out and they're going, yeah, I don't want to join the military. Like, I don't want to go kill people. That's their mindset. That hadn't even occurred to me. Killing people wasn't even something that went through my mind. I just wanted the pride of belonging to something bigger than myself. I wanted to belong. I wanted to learn some skills to make me a better person, to make me more confident, because I didn't have the greatest of confidence. And I'll get into that later on, you know, how my confidence was tested, how my leadership was tested, and how I overcame things that I didn't ever think was possible. To me, this is very interesting, the difference between then and now, the difference between the mindset of people. Like, when we weren't at war, I remember one of my drill instructors telling me that in my enlistment time, my next 4 years, we would be at war with the country. And we all looked at each other like, okay. You know, at the time, we were motivated, and we're taught to say kill in boot camp over and over and over again to get it drawn into our minds that that's what we're there for. We're there to protect the nation, and the only way to do that is to kill people. That's what they drill into our heads. It's kind of like, you know, quote unquote brainwashing, but it works, and it gets us to dehumanize the enemy, which there was no enemy at the time, so there wasn't really anybody we were against, but it's a general way of teaching us. So I look at that, and I look at society now, and there's labels for people that there wasn't really labels for back then. You know, we had the Gulf War, and I'm sure that they called, you know, Arabic people and people in the Middle East, I'm sure they called them ragheads and Hajis and stuff like that back then, but that wasn't even a term that I even knew. I was 18, 19, 20 years old. At time in boot camp, 20 years old, I had no idea what that term was. I'd never heard that before. But now that's a term that is used in the military, not by military leaders, but by Marines and soldiers, just as an everyday thing. That's how they talk. That, you know, and I don't want to get too much down a rabbit trail here of, you know, what they do and don't do. And I don't want to accuse anybody of doing something that they didn't do. But it's not uncommon to hear those terms. It's uncommon now because of society and politics and that whole spectrum. So I'm in boot camp, and I'm, you know, we were saying kill, 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 and I'm thinking in my head like, yeah, let's go kill, you know, but I don't have any intent to actually kill. None of us did. That was just, you know, what we were taught and brainwashed into our heads, and that's where we were going with that thought. You know, we're trained now. We're trained killers. That's what we do. But nobody had any intention of, like, getting out of boot camp and then deploying and going and killing anyone, because we weren't at war with anyone. So the mindset was different. The atmosphere was different. 9/11 hadn't happened. This was pre-9/11. There was no speech from anyone saying, hey, you know, someone attacked our country and you have to do the duty, patriotic thing to support your country and to fight for your country and maybe even die for your country. That wasn't told to us because that hadn't happened. There was no terrorist attack on us. This is just something that's totally different from today. And I was a recruiter in 2009 to 2013, roughly, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And when I was a recruiter, I'm recruiting people that knew that we'd been attacked before. We were in a time of war. We had Marines in Afghanistan. We had Marines in Iraq. We had Marines in other places in the globe that they knew going into it that there's a very high possibility that they could end up in combat situations or in to be deployed at least in a combat zone. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be shot at or that they'll be shooting at anyone or that their life will be in any more inherent danger than as if they were walking down the street. You know, you could get hit by a bus here. And the statistics show that you were more likely to get hit by a bus in the United States than you were to get killed in Iraq or Afghanistan, statistically. Now, there's a whole bunch of things that change that, but either way, it wasn't something that I had to deal with when I joined. So for me joining, it was not a call to patriotism. It was more of a, how can I fix myself? Plus, I wanted to serve my country. I did. I had a patriotic duty that I knew I had to do because I wasn't doing anything else. And I thought, I need to give back to this country. This country's done a lot for us. I'm a free person. I have the liberty and freedom to do what I want to do and say what I want to say. Doesn't mean it's right all the time, but I have that freedom. So I thought I should fight for that freedom. Stay tuned to find out what happens on the next episode. Thank you very much for listening to my podcast for the first episode, and I hope that I can reach out to people who haven't heard these type of things before, reach out and bring some people in and maybe teach them a few things just from my experiences so that maybe they don't have to experience the things that I have. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to hearing from me again, and I look forward to hearing from you guys as soon as my website is completed. Thank you, and have a great day.